The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. 17 after 7, continuing open phones on anything you feel like talking about this morning. 770-5633. Speaking of the Doors, actor Val Kilmer ended up dying last night, age 65. Of course, he played Jim Morrison in that 1991 film, The Doors. And I thought it was the most one of the most astounding movies I'd ever seen, and probably the best biopic ever involving in the Jim Morrison story. He was, as far as I was concerned, Jim Morrison. I couldn't believe it. And he sang all the songs in that movie. I used to have the CD of it, which I thought was just incredible, too, because in some ways he had a little bit better voice than Jim Morrison, in my opinion. I think, but Val did a great job on that. Of course, he was in Tombstone, all sorts of other movies, too. I think my favorite movie, I don't know if you have a favorite Val Kilmer movie, number two is The Doors. Number one is Thunderheart. Thunderheart, which he played the FBI agent out on the Indian reservation. That one just, I could watch that movie again and again. In fact, I just might, now that he ended up passing away. Of course, he was diagnosed with throat cancer, had a couple of tracheotomies over the years. And, gosh, 2014 is when he was diagnosed. So he'd been battling this quite some time. He had pneumonia, which is what finally took him out last night. But only 65 years old, but he'd been struggling with health for a while. And, gosh, I'm thinking, people saw him in Tombstone. Maverick. Yeah, Maverick from Top Gun. How could you forget that, too? Right? Yeah. Arguably a difficult actor to work with. But boy, when he was on, he was golden, man. I'll tell you. Really was. 770-5633. What's on your mind this morning? We can discuss this a bit. I wanted to touch on some emails that I ended up getting about mental health issues. We were having some conversations about that and trying to commit people. And one person weighed in. A really good opinion, and I'll share that with you here in just a minute or two, or maybe three. Depends on how the calls go. But I'm always willing to take your calls first. 770-KMED. Let me go to line one. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Good morning. Holly from Josephine County.
Hey, Holly. How are you this morning?
I am splendid. So Saturday, we're having our Patriots rally at 10 o'clock in the morning. It's going to be a really interesting day. We're going to have Senator Noah Robinson will be there. Representative Dwayne Yunker will be there speaking. Commissioner Chris Barnett. Former Commissioner Herman Bereshig will be there. City Council President Victoria Marshall. I'm going to be doing a little speaking.
Very good.
And the Ed Committee Coordinator, Oliva Herrera, will be there. It's a phenomenal opportunity for people who really want to talk to our leaders.
Now, this is interesting that you're doing this Saturday, because you know what else is going on Saturday, right?
Just mention that. Yeah, across the street at the courthouse.
Right across the street. Right across the street, you are going to have the hissy fit of all hissy fits with Democrats, Indivisible, and all the rest of them out there protesting. It's the day of resistance. You know, the day against. Now, you know, and you'll hear all sorts of stuff. You know that.
Well, of course. But don't you just love the fact that, you know, they want to call, you know, particularly Elon Musk a Nazi? Mm-hmm. Do these twits realize that the Nazis were socialists, that the Nazis were much closer to our Democrat Party than anything? It seems, and the KKK, you had to be a Democrat to belong to the KKK. When did they ever get this switch?
Well, I don't. It's one of those things here. It's one of those things, Holly, where you know how this ends up going. The Democrats, of course, really what they're saying is that an authoritarian government. You know, that's really, they're criticizing authoritarian government as when Democrats run everything, they're not authoritarians. It's tyranny with a smile. That's the difference. And we're talking about inclusion. But you know what I want you to do? I want you to have can you have a drinking game at your Patriots rally Saturday? Okay.
I like having one.
Okay. All right. This is what you want to do. What I want you to do is sit out in front of the, and, you know, after you have your Patriots rally, which is what, 10 to noon. I think at noon they're gathering for the hissy fit rally. And then they're going to be screaming and honking and banging of pots and all the rest of the stuff. You could have a drinking game, maybe raise some money, Everybody has to chug a beer every time you hear this. Now listen.
Don't take my health care away.
Don't take my health care away, okay?
Don't take my health care away.
Wouldn't that be a great drinking game, you know, to do out in front of the Indivisible protest on Saturday?
Well, it certainly makes you want to drink to listen to that kind of thing.
Yeah, it might give you an excuse.
Don't take my health care away.
And then you you chug a beer and maybe charge a buck for the... Yeah, no, you probably can't do that because of the OLCC. Oh, regulations. Gosh, you just can't sell it without a license. I'm just thinking outside the box here, trying to help you with a fundraiser, you know?
Yeah, there you go. Well, former city council member Vanessa Ogier, I guess it is. What a character. She seems to be heading up a lot of these demonstrations. Do these people read history, you know, and heaven forbid that we should have somebody to come in and try to clean up overspending so we aren't adding trillions of dollars, to the deficit.
They don't care about that. All that's cared about, though, is what do I get right now? That's all that matters. What do I get right now?
Well, the Democrats right now are doing everything that they can to just hammer down the average citizen. You know, we are just stacked with this homelessness problem, and they just keep dropping more and more problems on us.
You know, I wonder how this is going to end long term, because I'm reading some email trees behind the scenes, and I don't want to really bring up names and all the rest, but there's talk about, people kind of going vigilante on a lot of this kind of stuff over time. It's like, yeah, there may be an order against the city of Grants Pass, and Medford has to work under it, and Ashland and all the rest of it. But there comes a point that I don't think that there's a certain folks within the citizenry that are just going to start taking matters in their own hands. I'm not necessarily advocating this. I'm just saying that I understand where these things come from, where you're told by judges and legislatures that you're going to take disorder and mayhem on your streets. I don't think people want to put up with this. We'll see, you know?
Well, you know, I think just say no, you know, is starting to come up. People are saying, you know, we cannot accept this. And, you know, there is talk about it. I'm not into having, you know, fighting over it, you know, verbal discourse, yes.
But you can kind of tell that a fight's brewing, can't you?
It is. Well, it could easily happen. You know, there's so much frustration on both sides. Fear is one of the greatest motivators of, you know, for that kind of activity. And a lot of people are fearful. You know, the people that are here in the county that have a little something are fearful of losing that. They're fearful of losing the rights to their property. They're fearful of losing their homes because taxes are getting higher and higher. We're watching the trajectory of the county and the city, going broke. And that's very frightening. So when people are fearful, you get the
when people are backed up against a wall and they still think they have something to lose. There's But anyway, 10 to noon is when you're doing this Saturday, Josephine County at the GOP headquarters, right?
Great event. We're expecting a lot of people to.
Okay. Now remember, you might want your flak jackets or something, you know, just in case.
Well, hopefully not.
All right. Don't leave your headquarters, though, until their protest is over across the street, okay? Well, if they're willing, if they're willing to burn Teslas everywhere around this state, they're certainly willing to break your windows across the street. I'm not advocating. I'm not, you know, saying this is necessarily going to happen, but I would not leave your storefront alone, okay?
Well, that's a good point.
All right. Thanks, Holly. 770-5633. Hi, KMED. Who's this?
Hi, this is Double Dip Francine.
Okay. Everyone's double dipping after calling in with Eric. That's all right, though. I'll let you take another bite. Go ahead.
Thank you. I had no idea Val Kilmer had died. And I have to say, there were a lot of roles he was in that were not very well known. And
Val Kilmer, talking about? Okay.
Yeah, some of them he was just outstanding, and yet the movies are not very well known, you know. But there's nothing that touches Doc Holliday.
You think that was the best one for you?
I absolutely just love that character. I have watched Tombstone I don't even know how many times over and over, partly, if not mainly, because I love to watch his Doc Holliday.
You know, I never saw Tombstone, so this sounds like a must-see for me, really, right?
Really, you need to. His portrayal was just unique and excellent. You'll dig it.
Okay, I've seen so many clips of him as Doc Holliday. Yeah, well, I got two guns for you, one for each of you.
That kind of thing. No, you got to watch the whole thing. You know, the I'll Be Your Huckleberry.
Okay, will do. All right, Francine.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye.
I don't know if we have any more double dippers or not here on Wheels Up Wednesday, Liberation Wednesday. Hi, who's this? Good morning. Welcome.
Hi, it's me, Cherry.
Cherry, hey, now you are our resident film critic, so you must have something to say about Val Kilmer. I think that Thunderheart is his best. What do you think, huh?
I think he was so incredible in The Island of Dr. Moreau.
Really?
Yes, he was so scary good. I mean, it was amazing, amazing. I just love him.
I never saw the remake of that because I saw the original one from like the 1930s or 40s, the one with Peter Lorre, and they would like he would put his head in between a couple of electrodes and it turns into a skull or something, you know the cheesy kind of horror effects of the 1930s and 40s. It's what they could do. But what did you think about this one, the remake?
I loved it was so incredible with Marlon Brando, who was like 300 or 400 pounds.
Oh.
And, it was so scary. You know what? It's happening right in our backyard, the Island of Dr. Moreau, because people are really turning into creatures and not people anymore. Huh. So I love that movie.
So the Island of Dr. Moreau has been turned into an instruction manual in the United States. Got it.
Really good. But anyway, the other one you would love and I watched last night was with Bruce Willis in 2017, I believe, before all of his stroke that he got in the night.
The aphasia.
Yes, is Death Wish. Not with Bronson, but Death Wish with Bruce Willis.
Death Wish. Did I see that one?
It didn't get much stars, but it was really good. It was so good. I loved it. And then the other two happened to my ancestors was One Life with Lena Olin, Anthony Hopkins, and Johnny Flynn. It's about the Holocaust. And, there's millions of those movies, but One Life was the most moving movie I've ever seen in my entire existence based on a true story.
All right. We're just going to have a segment with you at some point just called Cherry's Cinema. Cherry Cinema, all right?
Love that.
Thanks, Cherry.
One more is with Bill Macy. It's called Focus, and that's also having to do with anti-Semitism, and it was so good with Laura Dern and William H. Macy.
And the name of that again?
Focus.
Focus, all right. Thanks, Cherry.
Focus.
Good job.
You're welcome.
All right. Giving her thumbs up on things that are worthy of your time. Let me go to line 4. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
This is Minor Dave.
Hello, Dave.
Yeah, I wanted to let you know, they know where the Ark of the Covenant is. It's in the Smithsonian in a warehouse somewhere.
Well, that's not what the CIA paperwork. I was talking about this earlier this morning. This seems to be a story which is now kicking up here that the CIA used remote viewers to view where it was, and they're claiming that it's in Hebron, Israel, or in that neighborhood right now.
You can't believe the CIA for anything. They're a bunch of liars.
It's disinformation, right? So it's in that warehouse, and Doge hasn't found it in those government warehouses yet, right?
No, because it's mislabeled. It's marked as the Ark of Collectibles.
Oh, okay. The Ark of Collectibles instead of the Ark of the Covenant. Great. Hey, listen. Now, even the CIA, according to the Daily Mail story, I know this is a crazy, funny story. I mean, we can laugh with it and have a little fun with it. But the remote viewer was saying that, yes, if you look inside it, he saw, the remote viewer supposedly saw in the CIA documents that when people would open it up and they'd look into it, and yet they'd be destroyed, right? So could you imagine what kind of fun we could have inviting, folks in Congress that are causing trouble, let's say, Yeah, hey, it's a little field trip. Come over to this this government operation here and just open up the lid.
We got something to show you.
Yeah, we got something to show you. You want to take a look? Sure. Okay. Oh, well. Talk to you a little later, Dave, on that one. Pelican Dream.
Thank you.
732.
Since 1979, Dusty's Transmissions
at AmericanIndustrialDoor.net.
You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
American Industrial Door does do great work. I can attest to that for sure. 734, Deplorable Patrick, you wanted to weigh in on Val Kilmer, great actor, dead at the age of 65, had been battling throat cancer since 2014. What are you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking that I don't envy anybody, but if I was going to envy somebody, it might be Val Kilmer.
Oh, yeah?
But if I looked like Val Kilmer, I'd have to be fighting off women even worse than I already do.
Well, I know that in the, especially in his prime, in his 20s and 30s, I have to admit, that was one of those things where there's one of those guys I looked at him as just, oh, man, the genetic lottery, right?
Yeah. And I didn't know about the movie Thunderheart. I'm sitting right down. I'm going to order it. And, see what it is, but
I tend to like Native American themed movies for some reason. I do have a like for those, and he plays the part of I'm even a little light on the plot. It's been a few years since I've watched it, but I know that he's an FBI agent, and he's getting sucked up, I think, in a murder mystery, and it's involving a lot of Native lore, and I just found it a very well done, just amazingly themed, well themed movie too. I just really thought that was really good.
Well, I'm going to go out and but one thing I'll throw in here, and that's part of the factoid thing about this, I did see a picture of him fairly recently, and I was really disappointed. He really let himself go. He gained a lot of weight, and you know, with a guy that has so much going for him, you think, why in the world would you just, you know, turn into a fatso? And so that's probably where his health problems came from. You have other celebrities who get into health and nutrition and exercise, and they seem to live forever.
I think it's one of those, honestly, I don't know how he was taking care of himself. Like I said, he was battling this a long time ago, and I remember reading a story that a lot of the bloat came from, he was taking a lot of prednisone, too, for anti-inflammatory purposes, and of course, that tends to bloat you up into a blimpy, you know, if you take enough of it. But there's also probably maybe he realized that he was just on the downward side and was not going to be able to survive the, you know, the throat cancer issue. And then maybe you just figure, OK, I'm going to have a Wendy's double cheeseburger and a Frosty every day because I'm going anyway. At least I'm going to enjoy my meal. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. But, yeah, you're right about the observation, though. Sure.
Yeah, I appreciate the reference. I'm going to order that movie right now. So,
okay.
Thanks a whole bunch, Bill.
All right. You take care, Patrick. 737. KMED 99.3 KBXG. What's happening with gold this morning? Well, on Liberation Day, gold is still sitting there at just under the all-time highs here, 3,124. And silver just a hair under 34 bucks. And so if you have scrap gold, scrap silver, boy, no better time than to take it over to Jay Austin and Company, gold and silver buyers in Ashland at 1632 Ashland Street, 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass. And get yourself some money and put that stuff to use. Don't let this kind of valuation go unnoticed, okay? Or if you're like the central banks and some of the big money people, they're looking at 3,100 gold and saying it is telling us that it is time to protect some wealth, that it's performing its role right now, and that we don't believe inflation is going to be under control. We don't believe that governments are really going to be able to get their budgets under control, United States included. And so we're going to have a few ounces stacked. Maybe you want to stack more. But either way, Jay Austin will take care of you. 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass, 1632 Ashland Street in Ashland. But boy, they sure do make it easy to sell the scrap right now. They just weigh it and then cut you a check. Life is good. Good stuff, and good people you're dealing with. One of my oldest sponsors, jaustinbrokers.com, grantspasscoins.com on the web. But most importantly, all you can also purchase and sell. I don't know if you can sell through, but you can certainly purchase through fortunereserve.com.
Hi, this is Lisa from Kelly's Automotive Service in Grants Pass in Medford.
Hi, I'm Michael with Gage of Construction, and I'm on KMED.
742, we appreciate you being up this morning. Todd's in Central Point. Todd, you had a quick memory of Val Kilmer because you dated someone that was going to be his assistant, huh?
Yeah, back in the 80s, an ex-girlfriend of mine was going to be hired as his personal assistant.
And you grew up in Studio City area, right, of Southern California, so you were all immersed in this culture?
He went to Chatsworth High School down there, mm-hmm. and we're the same age. And he was about to go off to Africa to shoot this movie, and I warned her. I said, you know, he has a bad reputation for not getting along with people, and I think that was borne out. That mm-hmm. movie... The Island of Dr. Moreau, he and Marlon Brando, they wouldn't even be in the same room together. They had to shoot the scenes separately.
Really?
But also his big breakout movie was a Zucker Brothers movie called Top Secret. And I recommend people see that. That was such a cute movie. He danced, he sang, it was funny.
And that was a spy spoof, if I recall, right?
Absolutely. And also, no one's mentioned yet, the movie Heat. And that was the movie that the two murderous bank robbers down in the North Hollywood shootout used as a model on how to attack that Bank of America.
Yeah. So, hey, well, thanks for sharing the issue about your girlfriend. And did you marry this girlfriend or did she?
Oh no. But also, he also wrote a book, I Am Your Huckleberry, and I recommend people read it.
Okay.
One other quick local story, and I'll let you go. A friend of mine was attending a church in Wairika, and this, I can't even remember how long ago it was. He walked in, and he said, could I play your piano?
wait a minute. Val Kilmer just walked into the church and asked to play piano? Really?
It wasn't during a service or anything. He just wanted to practice and play on the piano, and my friend said he was just the nicest guy. So that's a local story.
Yeah, so nice guy personally from what I understand, though. But yeah, a reputation of very difficult to work with, that's for sure.
Right.
Got a lot of work, though, in spite of the fact that he was difficult to work with, because obviously he was bankable. He was a bankable star in the day, right?
Absolutely, if you're that good looking. You and he, you're like doppelgangers.
I'm a doppelganger for Val Kilmer now, or in the later part, as he got a little bit inflated, I think is really where the inflated Val Kilmer. But thank you for the call. All right. I'll catch you a little bit later. All right, Todd. Good call. I like that. 7:45. I want to talk with Mary Lynn Jarvis here. And I had a great little conversation with her yesterday because she is a retired school librarian. And Mary Lynn, it is a pleasure having you on. Welcome to the program. Good morning.
Thank you.
All right. Where were you a school librarian? Because there's been a lot of conversation about the choosing of books. And you were a librarian from what, 1986 to 2008? So about 10, 15 years ago is when you ended up quitting or retiring from this. But what districts did you work in?
I was a school librarian in Missouri.
Okay. And the question that has been brought up is this this House Bill 1089, which was passed yesterday, which would make it very difficult, if not impossible, to challenge a really sexually explicit, very age inappropriate stuff. And it does look like it's going to be on its way to passing the House and then be signed by Governor Kotek into law. And what was your experience and who actually set up was it all school board choices back in the day that determined whether you were allowed to buy books or, you know, where was the authority in your day of a librarian?
The school board approved the school selection policy, which was passed down to libraries all over the nation from the American Library Association. The school library section of it was very specific and included such things as the book had to support and enrich the curriculum and the student's personal interest in learning. It had to be appropriate for the subject area and for the age, the emotional development, the ability level. I'm just reading off of the actual school library selection policy, mm-hmm. that all schools, as far as I understood, had the board look at and approve, and that was like our constitution.
And that was not that long ago in the grand scheme of things, correct?
No, and this is the actual current recommendation for school library selection criteria policy. And so what I'm trying to figure out is why people have to go to the school board or to the legislature about a book challenge when the school selection policy could have stopped the book from being circulated any further. All a parent had to do was fill out a form, and then in the way it was handled in our school is you go to the principal once the librarian receives the form from the parent, which is very specific, what you complain about, what specifically, quote, you know, bothered you, what page was it on, and what would you like us to do about it? Do you want us to withdraw the book from the collection? Do you want us to withhold it only from your student, your child? What do you want us to do? And so that form, then I would take the principal. He would form a committee of teachers, usually 3 to 5 teachers, who would read the book in its entirety to see whether this quote was even, you know, I don't know, appropriate in any way or not. And then they would make a recommendation to me. Then I would go back and I would write a report to the parent. And I would include every single section of the school selection criteria.
It's interesting here, Mary Lynn. By the way, I'm talking with a retired school librarian, Mary Lynn Jarvis. Mary Lynn, it appears that what the state of Oregon has done with Senate Bill 1089, this according to State Senator Noah Robinson, who talked with me about it yesterday, is that it is put in state law that if you have any kind of protected class, and this would be like LGBTQ, you know, transgenderism, whether it's a person of color, you know, all of these other various created protected classes, that it ends up being next to impossible to remove a book from the shelf because it would be looked at as discrimination against these classes. Was there anything like that that you had to deal with there up until, you know, the mid 2000s, you know, really?
It wasn't an issue.
It wasn't.
Because the classes were not protected really as such back then. The political climate was a little different.
So that is what has changed between when you were a school librarian and now.
Yes.
Now, the American Library Association has been accused of being one of the most so-called woke organizations today. Have you kept in touch with any of your colleagues or, you know, that system now and watched it?
I quit my membership in ALA long ago because they stopped being neutral. I just absolutely couldn't support their position anymore, where they were actually taking sides and collecting money from librarians to promote homosexuality and the gay pride parade. So I quit the ALA. However, other librarians did have to promote books that discussed, we're talking about in the middle school and the high school, that discussed homosexuality. But transgenderism wasn't even heard of.
Yeah, it wasn't a thing, you know, at that point. You know, Mary Lynn, it's quite interesting because it sounds to me like the state is trying to cover itself with a fig leaf by saying, well, we're going to be going with the American Library Association guidelines, the ALA guidelines, but the guidelines themselves have shifted to a very severe thumb then on what is considered acceptable for, you know, a 14-year-old in high school, let's say, or in junior high.
I don't
right?
know. Because when it says that the book must be appropriate for the subject area and for the age, the emotional development, the ability level, the social, emotional, and intellectual development of the students for whom the materials are selected, I'm thinking they're selecting them for the librarian, who is a very liberal person, or they're selecting them for some teacher. But they're not selecting them for the students.
Yeah, but where is the educational value in wild teen sex scenes, you know, with graphic?
Absolutely none. And then the very first item on the selection policy is it must support and enrich the curriculum and or students' personal interests and learning. Yeah. What do you want them to learn, you know?
Well, apparently the educational process is wanting people to learn about the pornography process. I think that's you know, given what is being protected here under the guise of non-discrimination, I don't know if I could come up with another explanation for it. There's not enough pornography in the schools, apparently, I guess.
I can't explain it. But one of the items on here, and it's a big one, is to balance the cost with the need. Now, I don't know about the school district here in Oregon, but we had a strict budget, and we had to first meet the needs of the curriculum, and then we had to buy all of the award-winning books that were being recommended throughout. We're talking about books that were like in a contest. We had the Mark Twain Award in Missouri, where the kids would read from a selection of 20 books.
Well, you know, the funny thing is now is that Mark Twain is considered something that you shouldn't be reading.
Well, they didn't change the name of the award, so it's still
not yet
for the younger children.
They haven't chiseled Samuel Clemens' head off the award yet, but they're probably getting around to that.
No, he's still loved in Missouri.
Point well taken. Mary Lynn, I really appreciate you sharing a bit of your experience here. So. Really, what we could be, they're hiding behind ALA, and ALA has changed over the years, because even you yourself noticed the corrosion of standard then. And
that's true, but the selection policy is still very neutral.
All right. Thank you for the call, and thanks for sharing your experience as a former school librarian. Okay?
You bet.
All right. You be well. Thank you.
Thank you.
754 Mary Lynn Jarvis. This is the Bill Myers Show at KMED.
Homeowners are discovering what lawn care professionals have known.
News Talk 106.3 KMED. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Interesting day always. And Lucretia, you're checking in rather. Go ahead. What's on your mind today?
You know, my brother thinks Trump walks on water. You just got to be positive. You know, and it is nice to be positive that, you know, like Marcus Aurelius said, tyranny from within is the hardest to face. And I was listening to a Catherine Austin Fitz talk from way back, like 40 years ago, when she was talking about the money laundering in Wall Street.
By the way, I want to make sure that people understood when you talk about Catherine Austin Fitz, and a lot of people don't know who she is, but she was within, I think, the first Bush administration, wasn't she?
Under Bush Senior,
Under Bush Senior in housing, in the housing That's world, I think is where she worked. Right,
brilliant with understanding the money.
Yeah,
and anyway, she and Michael Rupert, but she was talking about all the money laundering through Wall Street, and some of the companies were Hewlett Packard, Ford, guys, General Motors, Whirlpool, General Electric, Philip Morris. They didn't mind them doing it, but it was the amount that they were laundering. So these big companies that, you know, we think are all, you know, American and everything, are just, you know, part of the destruction of the children, you know, and the people of America. But she also talked about one of the biggest things that Trump did when he first came in is FASB 56.
Is what? Is what?
It deals with literally...
is what? What was it? I can't understand what you said there, Lucretia. I want to hear it clearly.
He calls it FASB 56.
What, 56? What?
FASB. She calls it FASB, but it's one of the first things he did when he came in 2016. And she says it's made it so the government can hide money by you know, just not disclose where the money's being sent. So it's interesting that now they're doing this, but it's also interesting people are thinking, oh, the government can't do anything right. We'll just let, you know... Musk, you know, handle it and save those people.
You know, I actually agree with you on this particular case, because I didn't want to, I do not, and I'm going to go on the record here, and this may be controversial, I do not want to replace a ill-functioning representative republic democracy in decline with a super efficient technocracy surveillance state either. And I would dare say Elon Musk and the various other tech bros kind of lean towards this. And so that's where I break with the so-called Department of Government of Efficiency. Now, if you want to get rid of the waste and the fraud, hey, I'm all for this. But I'm concerned what is to replace it next. Is that kind of where you're going?
Yeah, like she says, it's now illegal. You can't report any of the Tesla fires with the cars that where they're just, you know, burning up the people and, you know, the cars and creating the house fires and mm-hmm. all. You can't report that anymore.
Yeah, I don't want to replace one dictator with another dictator-type system just right. under a different name and a different style. That's all I'm getting at, okay? And
yep,
so,
I agree.
And I think that, and I'm hoping that that people, because, hey, listen, I was happy to give President Trump my vote. My concern, though, is that there may be, well, and we'll have to see. You know, part of this is that you're going to have to let some of this play out. We're not even in really basically 100 days right now, you know?
We're not. Hey, Bill, do you know who runs Netflix? I don't, haven't had a TV since 2006, but I remember you were talking, they were just putting on a lot of smutty stuff, mm-hmm. right?
They were for a while. I do have a Netflix account because I did want to watch a couple of movies. I just re-upped it recently. The part that I find most interesting is that you want to know what's really funny about Netflix, though? Netflix seems to like to take every actor in any kind of a series and replace it with a black, an African American. And there is a series that they said, we picked this for you, Bill. And it came out there and it talks about the residents of everyone living in the White House. And you see on the screen is, you know, everybody's black, everybody, you know, on the screen. And I thought that they were only kidding around when they were joking about making the Greta Thunberg story with everyone.
Right. It's kind of what families own that Netflix.
No. Which ones?
Edward Bernays and Bertrand Russell.
Really? I'm going to have to look that up. You see, I don't know if I want to believe you on this one, but that's a great, great theory. But this is pre-Conspiracy Theory Thursday. This is Wednesday. This is Liberation Wednesday, Lucretia. Get with the program.
He well knows.
Okay. All right. I'll look it up. Thanks for the call. I appreciate that. Boy, that's going to send me on a fox hunt, I imagine. It's a couple minutes after 8 o'clock. This is KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass. We're going to be talking a bit of American history, both older American history and newer American history, too. And I am so looking forward to this. Jared Knott, he has written a second edition of Tiny Blunders and how government people, the worldwide throughout history, tiny little mistakes that they make end up having huge consequences. It's an interesting, fun read. We'll have a little talk about some of the stuff that went on. That'll be coming up in about 10.
Ready?